The following is Carrie Ann Gilloway's talk, Schrodinger's IA, Learning to Love Ambiguity, from the 2013 Information Architecture Summit.
The 2013 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by User Interface Engineering. Stay tuned after the podcast for a special offer from UIE.
Hello, everybody. My name is Carrie Ann Gilloway. I speak funny because I come from Cape Town, South Africa, and I've been told that there are some people who are coming to my talk just to listen to my accent, so I hope that I don't disappoint you. I'll try to stay in character. I'm a content strategy consultant, and yeah, so I work for a range of different clients across a number of different industries. Every time I go to a kickoff meeting, there's three little words that I dread, and I know that they're coming every single time. So what's next, my client says to me. They've just filled my head with a whole bunch of information, and suddenly I'm on the spot and I need to tell them exactly what I'm going to do. So here's what I'd like to say in this situation. I'd like to tell them, I'm going to drive home from this meeting, and I'm going to have a little think. I'm going to write some things on bits of paper. I'm going to have another little think. Then I'm going to sleep on it. And then it'll be tomorrow, and we'll see. But clients don't really like that. So here's what I actually tend to say. All right, great. We're going to spend 2 weeks doing a full content audit. I'm going to interview one stakeholder per department. We'll hold a discovery workshop. I'll work through your web analytics, look at your user research, interview one member of each key audience, draw up a new high-level IA, and identify your main content types, and then I'll give you some content templates. The problem is that very quickly all goes to hell. Because 1 week into the content audit, I realized that the intranet that I'm auditing is actually 10 times the size they told me it was. The departmental stakeholders turn out to not be very good resources at all, and I realize that there are other people in the organization that are much better resources. The analytics are totally useless, and the organization isn't as mature as they told me they were. But now I've got to soldier on because I've committed. So why does this happen? It happens because uncertainty is uncomfortable. We don't like feeling uncertain. So I'm a little different in that I have ADHD, and the real kind, not the kind where I have to check Twitter every 5 minutes. I do that as well, but that's not because of the ADHD. And it's interesting, there's actually some evidence that people with ADHD have a higher tolerance for ambiguity. We can accept fuzzy thinking a little bit better. So we don't mind the uncertainty, we can live with it. And I think it's probably because our minds tend to make very fluid connections between things, so we can kind of just live with that sense of intuition. But I realized very quickly into my career that other people are not like that. My clients in particular are not like that, and they really need some certainty. And me saying to them, no, it's fine, don't worry, it'll all come together, that doesn't make them very comfortable. So uncertainty is uncomfortable. Then we end up feeling under pressure. You're sitting in a meeting, and you've got all your clients looking at you like that, and suddenly you're under an awful lot of pressure to come up with something. And you kind of feel them looking at you going, you have done this before, right? Yes, I've done this before, but I haven't done this before. This is a new project, and it's completely different. So I started to assume, well, everybody else must have a process. I better have one too. And so I kind of put aside my happiness with this uncertainty and moved on to mapping out my personal methodology and my processes that I would be following throughout my projects. So we map out this personal methodology and then we use it over and over and over again. We choose a route and we stick to it. And we do that because we don't want to be seen as inconsistent. Because inconsistency means incompetence, right? It means we don't know what we're doing. So what's the problem with this? The biggest problem is that we look for the answers before we even understand the questions. It takes time to understand an organization's culture and their climate and their structure and what their needs really are. What they tell you their needs are very frequently not at all what they really need from you. And it's not just unreasonable to expect us to be able to come in cold and know everything there is to know, but it doesn't serve our clients when we try to treat projects that way. So we need to stop presuming to know how to solve the problem when we haven't even figured out what the problem is yet. We also make decisions too early. I don't know how many of you read Choose Your Own Adventure books when you were young. Yay. So I don't know how many of you went back after you died and thought, no, you know what? Actually, I didn't mean to pick that option on page 45. No, I can do this again. Do over. That's what happens. And eventually you get to the end and you're like, yes, I killed the bad guy and I recovered the diamond. But of course, you went through 40 different choices before you got there. We ignore the things that we can't make fit, because along the way, we're discovering things, we're finding new problems and new issues, but they don't fit this process that we've set out for ourselves and what we've promised the client we're going to do, so we actually just have to push them aside and ignore them. We keep going through the motions even when we know we're going down the wrong path, and we get complacent, which is basically taking the easy way out. The other alternative is that we suffer through scope creep. I had a little chat with Dorian Taylor in the hallway yesterday, and the way he put it was, yeah, we end up being up all night. Because instead of changing direction, we just add things because we have a conscience and we realize that we actually need to do better for our clients. We end up solving the wrong problem. If you take a few moments, you'll see why my garden services, who replaced the lock on my gate when they left my house, solved the wrong problem. And the problem is that when we solve the wrong problems, either our solutions don't get implemented, or they do, and then they fall apart before very long. And that's really disheartening for consultants, to have put a lot of effort into something and then to see the client either just never use it or not implement it properly. So this brings us to the idea of ambiguity tolerance. Firstly, I need to say that that is not Schrödinger's actual cat. That is my cat. And she is apparently still very much alive, my husband assures me. I've been away from home for 2 weeks now, so I keep asking him, are you feeding the cat? He says he is. But for those of you who are not familiar with the Schrödinger's cat experiment, basically it's a thought experiment devised by Erwin Schrödinger, who was an Austrian physicist in 1935. And he suggested that you could put a cat inside a box with a flask of cyanide and a radioactive source, and then close the box up. And if an internal monitor detected that there was radioactivity, so if an atom was decaying, it would shatter the flask and kill the cat. So in other words, at some point, you wouldn't know whether the cat was dead or alive until you opened the box. And in fact, the cat is both dead and alive at the same time. And that's the idea of ambiguity. The box is closed and we can't know with certainty until it's opened. And I'm suggesting that we need to embrace this ambiguity. There's... forgot what was on that slide. I wondered why you were giggling. Yes, that is amusing. The ambiguity effect is a cognitive bias which basically causes people to select options where the probability of a favorable outcome is known rather than selecting an option where the probability of a favorable outcome is unknown. In other words, playing it safe. But embracing ambiguity means keeping an open mind and suspending judgment. And it means taking time out to feel out the environment and not allowing your brain to jump to conclusions. And it means giving your intuition some space to work. The slides I showed you earlier about just having a little think, it's about that. Ambiguity tolerance has been identified as a positive leadership trait, and the reason for that is that it allows leaders to change direction to take advantage of things when they find new information, instead of locking themselves into a course of action. And I think that it's essential for us if we're going to do our jobs properly. This is what Francis Bacon had to say. If a man will begin with certainties, he shall end in doubts, but if he will be content to begin with doubts, he'll end in certainties. So what does this mean for us in practice? What it means is that we need to start fresh with every project. We have a bunch of tools that we can use, but instead of locking ourselves into a process that incorporates those tools, we should just take that as a toolbox and apply them as and when needed, and not prejudge the situation, not assume that because this project looks like the project that you've done before, it is, because 9 times out of 10, it's going to be very, very different. We need to avoid our fallback methodologies, because it feels safe, but it's cowardly. This is taking the easy way out. And this is really, for me, the heart of it. I feel that we need to become less hung up on the methodologies and the processes that we're using, and become more principled about doing good work. And sometimes that means moving away from your established processes. And it means having really hard conversations with your clients. Nothing should be set in stone, and you should leave room for changing direction. This is a tweet that Destry Wyan, who's an information designer, put out a while ago. Anyone who does content inventories, do you find yourself tweaking the structure of your inventory grid a lot as you go along? And the overwhelming response was, yes, yes, we all do, yes. And we were so relieved because we learned that everybody else does it too. Whereas we had this idea in our heads that, you know, at the start of the project, I need to figure out my parameters and I need to know exactly what I'm auditing for and analyzing. And it doesn't work that way. We learn as we go along because we get new information constantly, and we have to become okay with that. Discovery is not a phase. It's an ongoing activity. It's part of every phase of the project. We are constantly uncovering things, constantly making new discoveries, and we need to accept that and accept that those discoveries can send us off in different directions. I was at Confab 2 weeks ago in London, and Lisa Reichelt spoke about strategic user experience. And she actually touched on this topic as well, the idea that problem solving is not linear, it's squiggly. I love this slide, because that's exactly what it looks like. Well, that's certainly what it looks like for me. It's very, very messy for a long time, and nothing makes any sense. And I'm finding all this information and pulling it all together, and then suddenly at some point there's clarity and focus, and it all comes together. I'd like you to take a moment to appreciate the multi-layered nature of this picture. There are cats. There is a puzzle in the shape of cats. There's a box. It just all fits. So it's our job to take complicated situations and simplify them. What about our clients? Yes, that is the tricky part. It's not easy to sell this idea and to get our clients to be okay with the notion of ambiguity and uncertainty, especially when you're dealing with corporate clients or government clients. I'm busy with a government project at the moment, and it's very difficult because they need certainty, they need structure, they have policies in place, and they need to be able to deal with it within those constraints. They've got reports to complete, and they've got people that they have to report to. They've got internal reputations to maintain. You've got to remember that the person that hired you wants to look good to their boss, and they need to be able to report back to them about the progress of your project. They've got KPIs to worry about. They don't know what to expect. This is a lot easier for us because, well, we know we're good at our jobs, right? And we know that it's all going to come together and we're going to figure it out, and there will be a solution, but they don't. This is possibly the first time that they've ever engaged in this kind of work and dealt with somebody like us. They're concerned about ROI, of course. It's all about numbers. And it's a lot easier to deal with numbers when there's certainty about the process and the outcomes. And what it boils down to is that they're scared. So we need to remember that and have empathy for our clients when we're dealing with this. So this is the part where I give you the answers. Well, I would if I had them. What I have is a few ideas. This is something that I've been struggling with in my own work. I wanted to highlight it because I get the sense that a lot of other people have been struggling with it too. We're all kind of sitting in our little corners going, everybody else has got this figured out, and I don't. And I think that we need to start being honest about it and really talking about what the true nature of our work is. So a few ideas about how to deal with our clients and how to make them okay with this idea of ambiguity. Firstly, be honest. Tell them up front that you don't have all the answers yet. And also, something that I've taken to telling my clients recently is, I don't work in a linear way. You know, I've used those exact words. I don't work in a linear way. In other words, I cannot commit to giving you something on this day that will look like this because things are going to change. But at the same time, you need to be confident. So when you tell them I don't have all the answers, you follow that up with, but I do know which questions to ask. And that instills a sense of confidence in them. The other thing is to believe in this idea of ambiguity tolerance. Make sure that you're okay with it. Because if you're okay with it, then you can communicate that to them and you can be that much more confident. So accept that it's all right. Don't let the little voice get to you that keeps telling you, no, no, you should have this all figured out by now. Also, communicate to your clients that we need to make sure we're solving the right problem. That's being confident. Communicate early and often. I'm terrible at this. This is really my downfall. But I know that it is so, so important. As soon as you find out something new, something that changes the course of the project, tell them that. Speak to them. Bring them into the process and explain to them why things might be changing. Manage expectations constantly and correctly. Stay calm because it's contagious. Have a healthy fear of commitment. try your best to not commit to specific timelines and deliverables until you're absolutely ready to do so. Because that is when you will pick up problems, is as soon as you've committed to something, there are expectations created. If you can manage this process and communicate with your client and explain to them what your process is and that it's squiggly, you can avoid committing to things too early. Collaborate, and this again comes back to involving your client. Bring them into things. Send them draft deliverables. Get them involved in workshops. Bring them into the process. This is a hard one. Commit to the work, not the deliverables. This is really difficult to do. I think it's probably easier for consultants because we can have detailed conversations, in-depth conversations with our clients and explain to them how we work and convince them that we're committed to the process and we're committed to actually giving them the best possible outcome. And that's really what it's about. So not committing to giving specific deliverables, but rather to actually doing the work. And if that means changing direction halfway to give them a different deliverable than the one they originally asked for, you need to make sure that they're okay with that. So finally, this is a quote from Dennis Cardis, a blog post that I read recently. When both the client and dev team aren't hung up on getting the design locked down through an early sign-off, it gives the design a chance to evolve into something a bit more prepared to survive in the real world. And really, that's what we want. We want our work to be able to survive. So in closing, we need to allow the ambiguity to exist as long as necessary, because at some point, it will all come together. The squiggly lines will start to even out, they'll take shape, they'll separate, and the fuzziness will turn to clarity. Learn to love ambiguity, because ultimately your work and your client's organization is going to be better for it. Thank you.
The IA Summit podcasts are sponsored by the UIE Virtual Seminar Program, with scores of online seminars your team can access on demand. For free access to a virtual seminar, visit uie.com/IAS13. And you can find the rest of the IA Summit podcasts at library.iasummit.org.